Hello and welcome to SRNA Ask the Expert podcast series, Community Spotlight. This podcast is titled Voices of SRNA Volunteers, and my name is Lydia Dubose, and I moderated this podcast. SRNA is a nonprofit focused on support, education, and research of rare neuroimmune disorders. You can learn more about us on our website at wearesrna.org. Our Ask the Expert podcast series is sponsored in part by Amgen, Alexion AstraZeneca Rare Disease, and UCB. For this podcast, we are pleased to be joined by Manal and Doug. You can view their bios in the podcast description. Well, hello, Manal and Doug. It's great to talk to you both today. Welcome, and thanks for being here.
Yep, great to be here.
For a little bit of background on our discussion, I just wanted to share, you know, SRNA was founded 30 years ago. This year, we're celebrating 30 years of SRNA. And it started out entirely as a group of, you know, individuals volunteering their time to come together, to find support, to find information. And it was entirely volunteer run and operated for a long time. And today, volunteers continue to be a big part of what we do at SRNA. And so I'm really excited to be here talking with both of you who have generously given your time as volunteers with SRNA. So let's start by getting to know each of you. If you'd like to just introduce yourself, share a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and how you first found out about SRNA. Doug, would you like to get us started?
I'd be happy to. I was diagnosed with NMOSD in 2017, almost exactly 7 years ago. It was in March of 2017. I live in Utah. I have a wife, and her name is Holly, and she actually does a lot of the volunteer work with me. We kind of try to do things together. We have five kids and eight grandkids, and we're kind of heading towards, not there yet, but heading towards retirement. And so this disease affected me a little later than it does some people. But I've tried to make that or take that as an advantage as I work with other people, that I have some life experience that I can share.
Awesome. Thank you, Doug. Manal, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Manal. I'm a fourth-year medical student at NYETCOM. The way I sort of found out about SRNA and my journey throughout medical school was really inspired by my brother. I'm the oldest of now four siblings. Back then it was three. When my brother, he started having symptoms of NMO, so ataxia and visual disturbances. He was around, I want to say, 7 years old. And I was around nine. And then it took around a year for him to get diagnosed with NMO. So yeah, just that experience really propelled me to pursue neurology and medical school. And yeah, I'm here today waiting for match day. And yeah, I found out about SRNA specifically just because I wanted to get involved within the community of neuroimmunology. And I had some time on my hands in third year of medical school. So I'm like, why not? This is the perfect time to get involved. So yeah, I was just like really lucky that I was able to find this organization.
Awesome. And that leads us into what I was about to ask is, you know, is there a specific kind of turning point or motivation that led you into getting more involved in volunteering? When you were seeking out volunteering, were there certain types of volunteer activities you were looking for? Manal, I'll ask you that first.
Yeah, I think for me, definitely as a medical student being on the receiving end of, you know, standard medical education, I will say we didn't really get a lot of neurology exposure, let alone neuroimmunology exposure. So that was definitely something I wanted an organization to focus on, was educating the public. And that's why I was really excited when SRNA had ideas to, you know, make these booklets to be more accessible to the public, or just like being really motivated to creating these public platforms where people can connect with family members or people who are affected by these diseases, and just having the general public know, like, oh, this is their experience, this is what they're going through, and this is something we should become more aware of. So all of those reasons, which is why I was really happy to be part of this movement.
Awesome. Thank you. And Doug, how about you? What was kind of your turning point, or what led you to getting more involved as a volunteer?
So I didn't really answer your first question. So I became aware of sRNA, I think, just through web searching, trying to find information about this new disease that I had, and found sRNA that way. I actually started volunteering for another organization initially, and still do. And the more that I read the content on the sRNA website, I felt like I wanted to be part of that community. It seemed like a well thought out, well organized, great information. And it just seemed like a good place to be. And the volunteer part is, you know, as you go through something difficult in life, and all of us will and all of us have, the hardest time perhaps to reach out and help others is when you're going through that experience. But in spite of it being the hardest time, it's probably the best time to do that, because it helps you get out of that little space that you might find yourself in as a result of being overwhelmed with new information coming your way. And it allows me to grow, to get to know people like you folks and many others, people that I would never have ever met in my little corner here in Utah. And I just would not have had that experience. So I have found that volunteering and reaching out, and particularly trying to communicate and meet one-on-one or one in groups with people, has been so beneficial to me and made me feel welcome. It makes me feel like I'm part of a larger experience or family or group, or whatever term you want to pick there. And so I guess my reason for doing this, honestly, is it's a little selfish, because I want to feel better about what I'm going through, and that helps me to do that.
Yeah, that's great. It's great to hear the different kind of paths that lead you into this common experience of volunteering. So now let's kind of dive into kind of more specifically some of the different ways that you have volunteered or been involved with sRNA. I know, Manal, you mentioned, you know, you've been involved in helping with some developing some of our resources and educational materials, and you also hosted a Rare Disease Day event last year in 2023. Can you describe a little bit about what it was like to be a part of those projects, and also just how volunteering kind of fits into your life?
Yeah, so I guess this was the third year of my medical school, so we were still really busy with rotations, but I had like that during my emergency medicine rotation, we had a little bit of like pockets of time just because it was like a shift schedule. So that's sort of how I got in touch with sRNA. And I was really excited about how willing the organization was to put like whatever idea I had and like be like totally gung-ho about it. I was like, that's awesome. And I was very excited to host some form of Rare Disease Day event. I just didn't know where it would be or like how exactly it would formulate. And then I got the idea of like, oh, why not just use, you know, my medical school? It's a pretty large medical school, so I think there would be like a bigger outreach. And also it was just a way for me to like fulfill what I felt like was missing in my medical education in the first 2 years of medical school. So it was really fun, and we sort of formulated the I guess like the event timeline as the months went on. We had like ample time, thankfully 3 months to plan it, and it was really, really cool because I got to collaborate with my school faculty as well, Dr. Letter. So she also gave a lot of input and helped make it happen. So we had trivia, we had speakers. We had a panel of patients and their caregivers give their input. And it was really shocking to me how much the medical students, like my peers, loved it, which I guess it shouldn't have been because we're neurology nerds, but like still, it was really cool how much people liked it, especially people who could relate. Like we had somebody who had an uncle with CIDP, talk about their experience in the audience. So that was very unexpected, but also like, wow, like, of course people are going to really, like, you're not isolated in your own world. So it was a great experience to just like connect with other peers and educate peers as well as myself, honestly. Other work I've done with SRNA and sort of longitudinally is the booklet project, is how I like to describe it. But we're taking, I guess, these diseases that might seem really complex and trying to paint them in a way that the general public or a new patient might understand. And a person going through this, it's a really difficult time. And I know my family, we had a lot of questions and we didn't even know like what the disease was. So I think something like this would have been really helpful for us back in 2005 or whenever my brother was diagnosed. So yeah, I just really feel like it's really needed. And I'm really happy to be a part of this like public education outreach movement that SRNA is facilitating. So yeah, I think it's just been a really, it's fun ride, and I can't wait to contribute more.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for bringing your creativity and your experience and fitting it in between medical school and on all that entails. How about you, Doug? Can you share a little bit about how you volunteer with SRNA, how you're involved with our support groups or other activities, and how it fits into your life?
Sure. So my primary volunteer work with SRNA is hosting a monthly support group with my wife. The two of us host that, and have done that for probably a little over a year now and just really enjoy that. We've met a lot of people. We've heard a lot of similar stories. We've heard some dissimilar stories. I think my favorite part of doing that is when someone who is newly diagnosed joins the group for the first time. And as they hear the experiences of others, and you can almost see it in their face, you can certainly hear it in their words when they express how grateful they are to know that they're not alone. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that over the last year. I'm so glad to find out that I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that has this disease, because all of these diseases are quite rare. And the other thing that I hope to try to do, and I don't remember who taught me this, but somebody said the best way to start a conversation is to ask somebody about themselves, because we all like to talk about ourselves. And I found that to be true. And so I work on asking questions that'll draw out individuals. And you know, nobody in our group, and so far it's all been on Zoom, nobody in our group needs to turn on their mic or their camera. And to date, we've never had anybody not do that. So we're able to get everybody involved, and they're comfortable talking and telling us their story. And you know, occasionally I'll get an email that I can reach out and respond to, or someone will email me and say, oh, I was going to try and come this month, but I can't. I'm so sorry. Because they enjoy that so much. And I got to be honest with you, it's just such a small investment for such a big reward. So for me, it's worth every hour and a half that we spend once a month doing that. So thank you for letting me do that.
Yeah, well, thank you for giving so much of your time. I know it might feel like bite-sized pieces every month, but it adds up to a lot. And you already kind of spoke to this, but I wanted to just ask if you wanted to share anything about what kind of impact you feel volunteering makes and what's been most rewarding. If you have anything else to share about that, Doug, go
ahead. Yeah, I mean, maybe I can just be more specific about what I said a minute ago. First of all, the biggest reward, honestly, is to myself. It's to me. You know, sometimes I'm a little tired at the end of a workday to have to sit down for another hour and a half and have a conversation. And I'm by nature an introvert. And so that was a little difficult for me. But I always feel re-energized and charged at the end of that hour and a half. And it goes by so quickly. And again, the big payoff really is those first-time people that come, and they're so excited to find out they're not alone. And then to watch them mature over maybe several months, and they're not the first time person anymore. Now they're the individual that has some experience, and they can share with the new first time person. So it's really interesting to watch how that group evolves. And we don't always have the same people, but there are three or four that seem to come, or they'll come for 3 or 4 months, and then they've had enough, and that's okay. But it is enjoyable to me, and the payback is watching the growth that happens in individuals as they go through that phase. That first year is really, really tough. I've been 7 years ago, but I still remember how every little thing that happens, you worry that you're going to have another relapse. And so when we can help people understand what's going on during that first year and virtually hold their hand through that process is rewarding.
Absolutely. Manal, how about you? Can you share a little bit about what impact you feel that you've been able to make as a volunteer and what's been rewarding for you?
Yeah, I would just like to comment Doug's really beautiful sentiment of giving back when you're at the hardest stage of your life. I think that's definitely something I wouldn't have considered as my first thought of like what to do when you're going through a tough time, but I definitely see the beauty in it, and I think it's something other people definitely benefit from. And I think it's something my brother probably wishes he had, but times were a lot different back then, 15 years ago. For me, I think the most rewarding thing is seeing my brother and my family also respond to my volunteering and getting more involved in the community. So not necessarily like SRNA, but just like the general neuroimmunology community in general. It's just really cool to see them sort of get out of their shell and like connect with other people. We were at like the Sumaira Foundation's New York City event recently, and we were able to meet Gigi over there. And that was a really cool experience. I didn't expect to see her. We also met Chrissy over there as well. So just seeing my family respond, because they've, went through this sort of on their own when it first happened 15 years ago. And you kind of get mixed information, especially back then when the disease wasn't as clear as it is to us today, or definitely not like the medical options that we have now for NMO. So it's just really nice to see them being more connected. And the other thing is, for me, is like this new generation of people who are having these rare diseases. I think just like having this like foundation, or being able to build this foundation, so then they come across, our website on the internet and being like, oh, like I'm not alone, like Doug said. It's just like really cool to, pave that way and hopefully, enrich one person's life with information they might not otherwise have known.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's amazing to see how much change has happened in the last 30 years, 10 years, 15 years, and what could be in the future too. And thinking kind of forward, for you both, and you have different contexts that you're coming to this community through, what do you hope to see in the future related to rare neuroimmune disorders? Are there changes or advancements that you hope to see, and kind of whenever you have just an idea of what this community looks like in the future, what comes to your mind? Manal, would you like to go ahead?
Yeah, so I guess for me, from the medical side of things, the way I would really love to see more of a push is, aside from just the acute phases of these diseases when they happen, I think people often overlook the chronic psychological effects and the cognitive effects that these diseases have. And especially within like cognition, I think it's something that, the community has started to explore a little bit more, but it's definitely not where we're at, like compared to MS. NMO, for example, isn't as well studied within its like cognitive impact. So that's definitely something I think is really important, especially for those who are diagnosed a lot younger. And what does that implicate for their future and like their working lives? I think that's just something I would love to see grow further. And also, like on that topic of like working and just like activities of daily life, I think that's also something that people might overlook, like in like an acute phase versus like a chronic phase. What are we doing to support this person to find a job, or get the care that they need at home, or if they're immobile, like how are they getting around? So all of these like factors that might seem somewhat like not as important like during the acute phase of the disease. I think that's something physicians might want to explore further, is just like, how do we chronically help these people?
Oh, that's great. How about you, Doug? What do you hope to see for the future?
I appreciate what Manal said, because I agree that you don't want to be defined by your disease, but there are things that need to be different as a result of that, and sometimes it's hard to find those. So maybe I'll go to the other end, the acute portion of these kinds of diseases. I'm reminded of a story. My daughter has a friend who's in medical school, probably just maybe a year ahead of you, Manal, and in Texas, and they were going through their slides of rare diseases, all in one day. And they get to the NMO slide, and the doctor said, "Don't worry about this one, you will never see it," and went on to the next one. And he was aware of my disease, so he that caught his attention. I went to the ER four times with symptoms that someone who would have been aware of that set of symptoms that I had would have connected that to NMO right away and got me scheduled for an MRI, and likely would not be have some of the disability that I have now. And so I think the group that we could should work harder to educate are though that first line, that ER group, because I didn't know it was a neurological disease. I had the hiccups, and they wouldn't stop, and some other things going on, but none of them were neurological for me. But the symptoms grouped together, someone who had had a little education or more than 5 minutes in medical school on this particular disease might have known. And so I think we can probably do a better job of educating the neurologists and the ER people, and Manal, with her background, is going to be tremendous with that. But it's even hard to find a neurologist once you are diagnosed that's comfortable treating you, because they're not seeing patients with NMO. They're used to treating MS and other neurological issues. And so, but I would be in better shape today if one of the four ER doctors that I had seen before, or at least three of them, would have picked up on this and helped me out differently. And I don't blame any of them, by the way. They just didn't know. But if they could have known, if they would have known, there are things I would be able to do today that I can't. And I don't hold them responsible for that. I just think we need to do a better job of educating them.
Yep, a lot of work to be done, and it's great to have folks like you and others involved in sRNA who are helping us get the word out and helping spread that message. It's great to see. So, we've learned a little bit about you both. We've learned a little bit about some of the ways that you've been involved in the sRNA community and some of the ways that you've been involved as a volunteer. What would you say if, somebody is considering, maybe getting more involved, if somebody's thinking about, like, should I volunteer? Should I, do something? What can I do? What would you say to them? Doug.
So I'm going to kind of go back to what I said earlier. First of all, I want to say something else. If you want to be happy, if you want to be productive, if you want to feel like you're doing something good, you have to make an investment. And sometimes, we don't all have a lot of money. We don't have a lot of other things. Maybe we could donate or whatever. We all have time. And for the return that I get for the little amount of time that I invest, it's huge. I wish the stock market worked that way, because I'd be able to retire, but it doesn't. But volunteering does work that way. It doesn't take a lot of time. It takes focus when you're doing it. But the reward, the boost that you get to yourself because of how other people feel for the work that you've done. And Manal, maybe you don't see that as clearly as I do, because you're working with books and other things that you're writing. But I can tell you, whoever put the materials together for sRNA when I started reading them helped me a lot. And that was really important to me, to have that work done so that I could know what was going on, and have something that I felt like was, had some scientific backing. So I'm sorry, I'm rambling a bit, but that little investment in time, big payback. I think is the takeaway.
That's great. How about you, Manal?
Yeah, I definitely am echoing Doug's sentiments here. I think people sometimes overestimate how much time we have to invest to get such a, you know, wonderful output. I think it's definitely something that I just put in a little bit, maybe every week or every month, whichever you can afford to do with your time. Even as a medical student in third year, I think it was very feasible for me because it was just something that I was very passionate about. And I think like where there's a will, there's a way. I like to live by, you don't have time, you make time for things. And even if it's just like an hour in your day, I think it just, the payback, like Doug said, that you get from, you know, building this foundation or connecting with other people is just so rewarding. It definitely brightens up my day whenever I'm able to interact with Lydia or other SRNA members and just like being like, oh, I'm like, you know, putting something positive out into the world. And maybe it's for selfish reasons as well, like Doug said before, but it definitely does make you feel better about yourself. And I think it also positively impacts you like professionally. I think it just gives you so much scope to connect with other people. And there's just like a whole world that you can get involved in and learn more about what you like to do and what your career will be in the future. And even if it's not professionally and more something personal, I think the reward is just, you know, it's at the end of the day, it just really touches my heart. And I think communities around the world can feel the same. And that's also something I forgot to mention, like a future goal of mine was, I think, definitely broadening our community internationally is something I think would really help. And it's also a personal goal of mine. So yeah, just, I'm also rambling a bit, but overall, it's small time investment for a really big reward.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing, and no worries about rambling. I love hearing your thoughts, and both of you, you have so much that you bring into this. So kind of as we're wrapping up our conversation here, I just want to open it up to both of you. Do you all have anything that you would like to share or that you would like to ask one another before we finish up here?
So Manal, we were talking before we started recording about what your future holds. Could you take just a second and tell us where you'd like to go and what you'd like to be? And you talked a little bit about that, but.
Yes, so my goal is to be a child neurologist. I found out I matched this Monday. Tomorrow I will, you know, open the figurative and literal envelope of finding out where I match. I'm going to give a hint and say it's really close to Lydia is where my number one is. So yeah, God willing, I will be a pediatric neurologist somewhere really warm. And yeah, I guess like my question to Doug is, so you mentioned like the three emergency medicine physicians, and that's also something that I also thought about was like educating ER doctors or just like physicians in general, not just emergency medicine physicians, because that is something that we see in medical school when we rotate is how other doctors sort of cross over and teach each other. So that's something that I think would be like a really cool project is to help like doctors sort of cross over, especially neurologists teaching EM physicians. I think that would be really awesome because they are definitely like the first line we have in healthcare. Yeah. So having that knowledge in their toolkit, I think would be amazing.
I agree with that. And we know, and you know this, that physicians have to have continuing medical education, right? Or I forget what they're called, but they do have to do some training and get to the hours so they can keep their license. And, mm-hmm. and somehow we need to figure out how we can get into that path. And I think the two groups are neurologists and people that practice emergency medicine. Because honestly, most people that start with this disease don't know where to go other than the emergency medical facility. And so, you know, whatever we can do there. And they're such a busy group. I've talked to a couple of them to ask them how we might do that. And I haven't got a good response yet, but we continue to think about that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm gonna have to like search for all the ER docs tomorrow, the future ER docs, and be like, let's make this coalition happen.
So, and I think part of that has to do with the size of the hospital and where you go. If you go to a very large hospital, you might find somebody that gets it. The hospital that I went to is a good size initially, but it's rural, and so they just didn't know. So, and I don't hold anybody responsible for that. I don't hold any grudges. My life would be different if that would have happened. And I'll be honest with you. Maybe what I'm going through and the opportunity that it gives me to volunteer and just to get to know people. And we went to a lot of patient days last year. And people that have enriched my life. Maybe it's worth not being able to type with his hand. Maybe that me or maybe that's a fair trade-off.
Well, thank you both so much. I love all the vision that we have for the future and what could be, and if we put our heads together, what can be accomplished. I'm really excited for the future and really appreciative of all the time that you've given over these past few years of being involved with SRNA, and just appreciate you both being willing to be open about yourselves and about your personal experiences. Really. I just feel so grateful that you're a part of our volunteer community. We have so many awesome people who are connected to SRNA. And so I love getting to know each of you all. And yeah, I'm just so grateful for your time and thank you so much for being here and for sharing.
Well, thank you.
Likewise, Lydia. Thank you. This was a great opportunity.
Thank you to our Ask the Expert podcast sponsors, Amgen, Alexion AstraZeneca Rare Disease, and UCB. Amgen is focused on the discovery, development, and commercialization of medicines that address critical needs for people impacted by rare, autoimmune, and severe inflammatory diseases. They apply scientific expertise and courage to bring clinically meaningful therapies to patients. Amgen believes science and compassion must work together to transform lives. Alexion AstraZeneca Rare Disease is a global biopharmaceutical company focused on serving patients with severe and rare disorders through the innovation, development, and commercialization of life-transforming therapeutic products. Their goal is to deliver medical breakthroughs where none currently exist, and they are committed to ensuring that patient perspective and community engagement is always at the forefront of their work. UCB innovates and delivers solutions that make real improvements for people living with severe diseases. They partner with and listen to patients, caregivers, and stakeholders across the healthcare system to identify promising innovations that create valuable health solutions.